Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
The Zone's non-stop sports talk continues with a look at Nashville's teams and at news around the nation from the lead writer of 1045thezone.com. This
is the Big Six.
The Big Six with Jason Martin, presented by Renter's Warehouse.
And here we go.
Straight up, 6 o'clock by my watch means it's time for the one and only Big Six here on 104.5 The Zone. Glad to have you with us. Blessed to have you as a part of my audience. My name is Jason Martin. You can find me on Twitter at JMartZone. Our telephone number, 615-737-1045. That's 737-1045. Ryan Albany is behind the glass, bending the dials radio style for me this evening. Coming up for a couple of segments, Joe Rexroad of The Athletic. We'll talk Titans, we'll talk Vols, we'll talk Predators, we'll talk pop culture. Who knows what it'll be? And we might even take some phone calls as well if you want to talk to Joe as well. Looking forward to that conversation. Also, I want to touch on, man, what an awful show Vince McMahon put on Sunday night. Monday wasn't much better. The XFL broadcast teams are out, and they're going back to Saudi Arabia, so it's time for me to go after blood money yet again. But let us start in Knoxville, because if you listen to this program on Friday, you heard me suggest that there are two defensive coordinators that reside within the state of Tennessee that currently have the position of head coach in the Southeastern Conference. And someone laid out the Peter principle to me. I already knew and had described it, but had not actually seen it called the Peter principle. And a couple of people tweeted me and said, hey, it's actually called the Peter Principle, what you're suggesting. Because my analogy was, not every politician can be the president of the United States. Some are just meant to be Goldie Wilson, the great mayor of Hill Valley. Some are meant to be decent congressmen. Some are just, you know, meant to be aldermen. And that's not to slight that profession. It's to say one is higher than the other in terms of how we view it. And the Peter Principle basically suggests that in an ideal situation within a company, and it just kind of is the way it happens, people advance right up until the point where there is a respective level of incompetence, and then they stop right there, and then you realize, whoa, let's bring them back down just a notch here. Not everybody's going to have a national radio show. Not everybody is going to play the starting center field role for the Atlanta Braves. And by the way, my Braves trail in this game 5 to the Cardinals right now, 13-1. And when they come back and win this thing 15-13, and that's all anybody is talking about tomorrow, you heard it here first. I'm just trying to get out in front of it in case that happens so that we can save the audio. I don't actually think that's going to happen. But the Peter Principle is in full effect in my analogy, in that not everybody is capable of being president. And it doesn't even mean like you get stopped or you can't be voted in. It means you're not capable of doing the job if you were to get there. So I have been pretty clear. I don't think it's going to work. I knew it. It has not been working at Vanderbilt. I think Derek Mason is going to end up taking 7 figures to be a great defensive coordinator somewhere. And I think Jeremy Pruitt's going to end up in the same spot. But I don't think that Jeremy Pruitt should be gone this year. And it has nothing to do with progress, if you saw progress against Georgia. It has really nothing to do with anything I'm seeing right now. It has to do with cutting bait too soon. If you do that, you become the Cleveland Browns. You become a turnstile franchise, a turnstile program, and it's always going to be a reset. What is one of the biggest excuses that Marcus Mariota's fans make for his inconsistency? Oh, well, he's got yet another offensive coordinator. He's got a new one every year. He's having to learn a new offense. Well, the same is true, and even to a much larger degree, with head coaches at a college football program because of the power that they wield, how their staffs are set up, and just the overall tenor of the job. And so if you go back and you look at the Tennessee Volunteers' recent history, Fulmer leaves in 08. Here comes Kiffin in 09. He goes 7-6 and he leaves. We remember that story. Derek Dooley comes in from 10-12. He goes 15-21. He's out. Butch Jones, skipping over Chaney's 1-0. Butch Jones goes 30-21 in 51 games over a four-year span, 2013-2017. Brady Hoke comes in for a couple games, loses those. And then Jeremy Pruitt's now 5-7 through 12. I don't think you give Jeremy Pruitt 51 games the way you did Butch Jones. The problem with Butch Jones, the thing that made it, I think, more difficult, was that he was recruiting. He was bringing in a lot of talent, even though he misfired on the biggest ones he could have brought in. He had solid recruiting classes. The problem was, and if you listen to anybody that was close to the program, especially the ones that used to play there, not that played for Butch, but that were around the program visiting, taking a look at the state of the University of Tennessee at the time, they said Butch Jones looked like he had no idea what football was, like how to coach it, how to motivate, and certainly how to put his young men in positions to succeed. Butch Jones proved to be inept, incompetent at the business of coaching football on this level. He was meant maybe to be a head coach at a smaller school, at a Central Michigan, at an Idaho, at a Wyoming, at one of those places, but not at the University of Tennessee, a top 15-20 program in the United States. Jeremy Pruitt maybe could turn out to be a great coach at a Tulsa or somewhere like that, somewhere a little bit smaller, but he's totally ill-equipped and in over his head at this stage, in my eyes today, to be the head coach at Tennessee. So I think it's going to end up being a consensus that it's a bad hire, but I think you have to give him a third year, and that's my point. It takes 3 to 5 years to really determine what is or what is not. I am basing this on what we have seen. There was progress to some degree in the effort displayed on Saturday in the loss to Georgia, but you have come to a place at Tennessee where you are 2 years away from being 2 years away. You are to a place where you can puff out your chest because you had 25 good minutes before it fell apart and the train went off the rails. And we forget about the other 35 and how that went. But you played with them for 25 minutes. That's where you are, and that's not where Tennessee should ever be. A program that has the facilities and the things going for it that the University of Tennessee does should not be in this constant level of futility and not just inconsistency, but flat out mediocrity bordering on worse, bordering on circling the simple human trash can at this stage. Moral victories are now things that you can claim as a Tennessee fan because you're not actually going to get more than that. And I don't know what you have at quarterback right now. I'm going to talk to Joe Rexroad about that. JG, look, this is going to be his last ride with that team. Maurer showed some good things, and he showed some freshman things. But you have to let Pruitt prove to you he is not the guy, and I don't think you can learn that in 12 games. And I know I have told you, this is not me being hypocritical or going back. It is me looking at this situation and saying you don't want to be the place that keeps on firing coaches, because who's going to want to come there after that? Even with all the positives that you have going for you, this is a program that at this point just needs some level of stability, maybe more so than anything else. If Jeremy Pruitt does not get the job done next year, if you don't look at that and see demonstrable progress in 2020 when that season starts, if you get trucked again by Florida and trucked again by Georgia, maybe that's to be expected, even if there is progress. But if you don't win the Midland games and you don't show up early in that season, that is a gigantic problem. I don't know that Tennessee wins more than 3 games this year. We'll talk to Joe about that here in the next segment. But if they come out next year and they're still flat, even if he has a great recruiting class, 3 years is enough for me. I said 3 to 5, but you can't give him 5 because this school can't deal with much more of this. And I'm not talking about the fans. There were still over 92,000, even though a good many of them were wearing black and red on Saturday night representing Georgia. But the fan base is still out there, and they're still passionate. I host the Tennessee Tailgate Show with Joey Kent. We take the phone calls. We listen to the optimism that still exists because people care so much about this program. But you can't let this reach the level of apathy. You can't let this reach Tennessee Titans over the past half decade level of apathy where by midseason people have checked out and Bills fans have invaded Nissan Stadium. And then the home team gets beat again. That's a problem. You have to find a way to inject energy. And I don't know if Pruitt's the guy to do that. As a matter of fact, I do know he's not. But you can't let him go just yet. It's just too soon. Have I seen a better Jeremy Pruitt this year than last year? Definitely not. But I saw people on social media all over the place during and after that game saying, oh, Pruitt's definitely got him ready to play here. How many practices did you go to put that tweet out there? What do you know about the preparation that he had going into this game? Like if David Ubbin says it, or if Rex Rhodes says it, or if somebody that's there, Trey Wallace or whoever it might be, Swain or some of those guys, if they say it, okay, that's different. But the lay person, the lay fan saying, oh, Pruitt's definitely got him ready to play tonight. Does he? What's the difference in the way that they played as it relates to what he did as a coach against Georgia? And then dating back to, say, Georgia State, for example. What do you point to and say, well, he's clearly doing a better job? 615-737-1045. We got Joe Rexroad coming up. Let's take one phone call real quick on this topic. Mike in Franklin is up first here on the Big Six. Mike, what's up?
Hey, just want to reiterate what you just said. When we get our pants beat, and we got beat down by Georgia State, and then the next week they lost by 47 points, you know, and we got two wide receivers that are going to be playing in the NFL next year, and we don't throw the ball to them. I mean, you can just rattle off one thing after another with Jeremy Pruitt, and nothing personal against him, but he ain't cutting it. And if you think we'll win three games this year, that'll be optimistic. And that's just my opinion. I'm a lifelong Vol fan. So
do you think he should get another year, or do you want to see him gone now?
No. Unless he can miraculously turn things around, I mean, we're spending more money on ex-coaches than any program in the United States, yeah. So we might as well keep doing it.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this question then. If you look at it there, who is it and what is it that's going to bring this program back? And I'm not – don't tell me Nick Saban. Don't tell me Dabo. Don't tell me that kind of stuff. I mean, no. Think about the problem becomes who wants to go to a no-win situation where you don't get that much time? That's why I look at it and I say if you give him a third year and he proves, okay, he's not the guy for the job, even if you think he's not the guy right now, at least you're telling other prospective candidates, you will get the opportunity to sink or swim at DC University. We're not just going to deposit you off when you have kind of a thin resume. I don't think it was a good hire because I don't think he was equipped, not having been a head coach anywhere, to take this job as his first job. Maybe if he had gone to a smaller school first and then built up, it could have worked out. Or maybe it could have been what we're seeing from Willie Taggart at Florida State, where eventually he got past the level of school he was really ready to coach. But Jeremy Pruitt, to me, just looks like a defensive coordinator. And the problem there is his defense is not good either, which really reflects poorly on him.
Well, no, I agree with everything you said. The only problem I have is we're paying a staff up there probably $10 million a year, and I'm, you know, never been a coach other than soccer and basketball for kids, but I can see that you got three guys that are playing NFL on offense next year, and you're not getting the ball to them. And, I mean, it's just like Jennings, Callaway, and the running back, you know, from Ensworth here, Chandler.
Yep.
And you know, that's what I loved about that freshman last week. He at least threw the ball to the wide receivers. Let him make a play, you know. If he throws an interception, what the heck, you know. But you got to get the ball to your best players, and they're not getting the ball to their best players.
Appreciate it, Mike. Thanks for your thoughts. Joe Rexroad, we'll talk more about this. We'll deep dive into the Vols a little bit deeper. Of course, he hosts the weekly podcast with David Ubbin of The Athletic. We'll talk that, and we'll talk some Titans and Preds as well. Stick with us. This is the Big Six on 104.5 The Zone. Welcome back, Big Six, 104.5 The Zone, little drive-by truckers, little Ramon Cassiano for you here on a Wednesday. Jason Isbell is going to be in town, what, next week? I'll be seeing him next Friday, day after my birthday. He's celebrating turning 41. If that's a celebration, we'll try it. We bring in Joe Rexroad. It's always a celebration when we welcome in Joe. He's on Twitter at Joe Rexroad of The Athletic, of course. Pod for Life he does with David Ubben. Unfortunately, having to cover the Tennessee Vols in great depth, even more so than I do as a host of the Tennessee Tailgate Show. Joe, how are you this evening?
I'm good, Jason. Thanks for having me. I got to say it real fast. I really like your your movie reviews and TV reviews. I read your review of The Joker. I watched it last night, and I feel exactly the same way. Like, I can't stop thinking about it, but I also don't think I want to see it again.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does, of course. And, I mean, I thought the last 20 minutes of that movie were really well executed. Phoenix's performance, he should just go ahead and walk. They should just go ahead and mail him the Oscar now. He shouldn't even have to be made to show up at the theater out in California to get it. But in terms of it being disturbing and hard to watch, and I'm not sure potentially a good thing to exist, I'm so conflicted about watching something that I look at and say, that is objectively great filmmaking, and I will never own it, and I don't think I could actually sit through it again.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so I saw someone mentioned Taxi Driver. It felt like a modern day Taxi Driver to me, you know.
Yeah.
Almost same similar time period too, but although I've watched that more than once, so I guess it's different in that way.
Yeah, Taxi Driver, it's kind of on that list of films that never, I think my age, by the time I got to it, I'd heard so much about it. It did not change my life the way I think some people had mentioned it before. And of course you mentioned it, De Niro's in both films. And the only problem I had with De Niro in Joker was every time I saw him, I realized I was watching Robert De Niro. If I was watching an actor I hadn't heard of, I could have seen Murray Franklin, but instead I just saw De Niro playing Johnny Carson. It's still, he was great, but I was like, wow, I'm watching Robert De Niro right now.
Yeah, you're right. That is a role that sometimes it messes it up when it's someone like that. That's a good point.
Yeah, so Pod for Life, which I enjoy, even when you guys do it in a hotel room, it sounds like, where there's a little bit of an echo. I know how these cell phone things work, so at times I've got to make sure I'm in the right place so that I can hear it very well. They lose to Georgia. They compete with them for 25 minutes, and I think when Smaglia missed the field goal and there were that last 59 seconds that went so poorly, that pretty much ended the game in effect. Have we reached a point with Tennessee where you actually can say, hey, not bad, you played with them for 25 minutes, even though there were still 35 minutes of pretty bad football left in that game that certainly led to the lopsided score?
Yeah, there's probably too much of that after that game, and I've been guilty too. The last 2 years against Georgia, you're talking – two lopsided losses, but I came away from both like, no, that wasn't bad. Now, obviously, Georgia's a national championship contender, but I do think, the bar maybe has gotten lowered a bit too much on that. And it is troubling, no matter who you're playing, how quickly things unravel for this team. The amount of blowout losses already under Jeremy Pruitt. David Ubben did a good piece on that about how it's an historic rate there, even compared with some of the, bad hires they've made over the years. It's definitely probably a little bit overdone. At the same time, look, I frankly didn't expect that much competitive football in that game. So you go in with such low expectations. And when you have a freshman quarterback who shows some spark and gives you some hope that, this team could, be in and win games against comparable competition, then, that's also, I guess, a little positive sunshine to come out of it.
Yeah, what Joey Kent told me on the Tailgate Show and what we were talking about actually before that show began was that watching him when he came in against Florida, and then he was a little worried about starting him against Georgia, and so was I. He asked me, he said, would you start him against Georgia? I said, no. I'd wait until Mississippi State just so we don't have a Nathan Peterman situation and we don't just wreck the kid's confidence. But he said he looked like a good high school quarterback. And what he meant by that was he can make some throws, you like his arm, but he stares down his receivers, he can't read pressure, he can't read coverage yet. And so he's going to take a lot of lumps, even though he's so young. But watching Maurer in that game on Saturday, Joe, for an extended length of time, what did you see from him that you liked? And then where are the obvious places where he needs some improvement?
Well, first of all, I totally agree with you. I didn't think they would. I didn't think they should have started him. You know, I didn't think they should go into it for that very reason. I mean, to me, it's like, well, look, if you want to keep Garantano engaged, and of course, as the season continues, that may still be a thing. I mean, to me, you start him against Georgia and you bring the kid in, and maybe, you know, some of the lumps are taken by Garantano, and then you throw the kid in, you know. But, hey, I mean, you know what? I liked how he came right out. I liked his energy. I mean, just even on the sidelines and things like that, I thought he just looked, you know, obviously he was excited. But I liked the way he seemed to give his teammates some energy. And that is a big thing, you know. Jeremy Pruitt said a lot of stuff in Gainesville that, you know, sort of my eyes glazed over on a lot of it, but I did agree with the, you know, the point he made about a quarterback, you know, needing not just to, you know, run the offense, but to give the team a spark. It's funny also, though, I think back 2 years ago, and I remember when Garantano was that guy, and it was the young guy, and look at what he can do, you know, and maybe as he develops. So you can't get excited, but I mean, look, he threw a couple fantastic passes in that game. I mean, I love his physical ability, and like you said, Jason, you know, reading protections, calling protections, you know, they did a lot of one and two read stuff for him, you know, and it's hard to do that for an entire game against a good opponent and, you know, get done what you want to get done. I think you saw that in the third quarter, you know, it just kind of shut down on him. So that's got to come along, but I think there's a lot more good than bad. And now having that experience, you know, I mean, this is a massive opportunity against Mississippi State. And, you know, if he can keep making incremental gains in that way and they can give him a little bit more, you know, by the end of the year, they might really have something. And I don't know if they're going to be in contention for anything then. I think that is not going to be the case unless they get this win Saturday.
Joe Rexroad, our guest here on the Big Six. You can follow him on Twitter at Joe Rexroad, writes for The Athletic, does a great job for them. As it relates to Pruitt, something I've said a couple of times recently and what I led off the show tonight talking about was the Peter principle, which is that companies have people that just advance to a certain level at which they display incompetence. And then you realize, okay, maybe we've pushed them too far. And my analogy is always the same. Not everybody can be the president of the United States that gets into politics. Some people are just meant to be great mayors, like Goldie Wilson in Hill Valley and Back to the Future, for example. There's a level where some people get to. And I look at both the schools, both SEC schools in Tennessee, and I look at Jeremy Pruitt and I look at Derek Mason, and I see two pretty good defensive minds that might not be equipped for the jobs that they currently hold. But at the same time, I'm torn because I think Jeremy Pruitt should get a third year to prove me wrong, because you can't become a turnstile program. Where are you right now on Jeremy Pruitt?
Well, I agree. I mean, look, I think it's more bad than good, of course, with him right now. But, and it may be. Look, this was always the question with him. It's like, okay, you know, look, you see these, you know, top coordinators of top programs get opportunities, and sometimes it works out. But with this guy, and, you know, with Pruitt, I mean, he has obviously been a very accomplished recruiter, not just a recruiter, but a guy who, you know, had found guys that maybe other people were down on, you know, and you know, had a good track record. But it's also like, what polo shirt was he wearing when he was out recruiting these guys? You know, it's Alabama, it's Georgia, it's Florida State. And so you had that question, like, so what happens now when you don't have the best players out there, you know, 10 or 11 out of 12 weeks? So far, it hasn't been good. But, yeah, I think he has to get the third year. I mean, you can't – look, I mean, like, I will say my expectation that he's going to get this done at the level Tennessee wants is not very high.
Right, me too.
But I can't say it's zero. I mean, I can't say it's zero. I don't know this for sure. I mean, I do think that, like, I like this recruiting class. I like this crop of freshmen. So I think he's bringing in some players that are real, you know, difference makers, especially if he develops them. That's something that obviously Butch Jones failed to do. And I think also some of Butch Jones' classes were paper tiger classes, and, you know, good star ratings and all that, but I think Jeremy Pruitt is much better at identifying players. You know, the development we're going to see, but again, I like some of these guys, so I want to see what it looks like now with another class of his next year, stacked with those guys. And you know, he has some good guys from that, you know, first class, but it's tough to judge that first class for a coach after a hire. So he's got to get year three. I think the rest of this year is important, because if it ends up like 3-9 or 4-8, it's such negativity going in that third year. You're going to see and hear about so much fan apathy. It's going to be hard in the third year when people know now, well, okay, maybe the buyout's not so massive that you couldn't do something, that people are going to jump on that first opportunity, you know, to want to get him out of there. And even though he shuts himself off from everyone, he's a human being too. It makes your job tougher, and he hears it and knows it. So to me, the rest of this year, very important for all of us to see, one, if he can do a better job, but also to give him some kind of chance in that third year.
Joe Rexford, our guest. We'll take a break. We'll come back. That word apathy, I really want to discuss more about where the Vols fans are, and then kind of shift gears and talk about the Titans as well and what we saw on Sunday against the Bills. So more with Joe Rexford. Of course, you can tweet him. Let him know you're enjoying his time here at Joe Rexford on Twitter. We'll be right back. Big Six here on 104.5 The Zone.
Zone.
Welcome back, Big Six here on 104.5 The Zone. Little Moon Taxi for you. I'm Jason Martin. I'm on Twitter at JMartZone. I really just want to, like, spend the rest of the hour trying to understand why Twitter believes that my home should be whatever it tells me it is. And I have to keep going back to latest tweets, and it's like, we'll bring you home after you've been here for a while. That's not my home unless you told me where I had to live. And luckily, that's not the way life works. Anyway, I digress. We bring Joe Rexroad back into the conversation. He's on Twitter, at Joe Rexroad, writes for The Athletic. Joe, I'm going to leave Twitter alone, at least for a couple of seconds here. But we were talking about apathy as it related to Tennessee right before the break. And there were still 92,000-plus at Neyland on Saturday. Now, a lot of them were not wearing Tennessee orange, or a good many weren't. But there were a ton of Bills fans here in Nashville on Sunday, and I see apathy, and I worry about apathy as it relates to the pro football franchise in this state quite a bit. It still feels like, to me, based on the callers, maybe they're not happy with the direction of the program, but there's still a whole lot of maybe misplaced optimism. There are people that are so dyed in the wool, orange and white, it just bleeds from them, and they can't help themselves. So I don't know. How close are we to apathy in Knoxville?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. You know, I do know, like, I know, you know, Tennessee fans and alums who, even, you know, in 3.5 years of living here, their habits have changed in that time. You know, in terms of, there's no question Saturday what you're doing. You're going to be, you know, at the tailgate 4 hours before the game, and into, well, maybe we won't go this week. I mean, I think we've seen some, but will you ever have, I just think that fan base, I think back to the BYU game and the atmosphere that night, a week after Georgia State. It's not like you know, this is like, you know, Ty Detmer or Robbie Bosco BYU. You know,
right.
So BYU team, and it was just a tremendous atmosphere. And again, I was just blown away. And of course, I actually was on the sideline at the end of that game. I turned around, took a picture of the crowd, tweeted, and, you know, said something like, you know, what an atmosphere. And then, like, the next play, they, you know, they blow it. So kind of felt bad about that. But, you know, I don't know. I do think that, like, you think back to the Butch, the end of Butch, and I think it was the Georgia game. I think South Carolina, too. And there was some alarming turnouts that year with good reason, you know. And I think like, if they lose to Mississippi State, if they get to the point where they – are out of bowl contention, and there really isn't that much to look forward to in these games. I think late in this year, you could see some pretty you know, thin crowds. Still, relative to other programs, though, I think you're right. I mean, I think there's just people. It's a way of life. I mean, look, there's nothing like college sports fandom, and I've been around some pretty rabid fan bases, and I'd put Tennessee's up against anyone from what I've seen. So I think you're always going to have a certain baseline there that'll be better than most places. But I also think you're not that far from you know, from being alarmed if you're Tennessee's administration. If the losing continues, I think you'll see an impact there, and it's not what you want to see. I mean, they want to see that stadium full.
Shifting gears here to Nashville to the Titans, is it fair to argue that right now they're the fourth best team in the AFC South? I mean, it may not be, but I mean, you've got Minshew doing what he's doing. The Colts go beat Kansas City with Darius Leonard at home watching the game. They got injury issues galore. They lose their franchise quarterback right before the season starts with the retirement of Andrew Luck. Then you got the Texans. They put up 50-plus on the Atlanta Falcons, even with their offensive line. They've got just so much talent. And then there's the Titans, where the only thing consistent about them is their inconsistency. So is it fair to say that they're the worst team in the AFC South right now after what we saw on Sunday?
No, I think you could definitely make that argument, Jason. There's no argument offensively right now, clearly. But now, you know, that's the Titans defense deserves better than this 2-3 record based on its performance. It's a very good defense in the NFL. But yeah, I think you can definitely make that case. And like you said, you mentioned the Texans and their offensive line, and it is, it's amazing what Deshaun Watson is able to do, and yet to see some of the hits he takes. But, you know, compare that to Mariota's protection so far this year. It's just been awful. And I know there are things that go into sacks, including quarterback, a quarterback holding the ball too long or not making a read quickly enough, a receiver not winning off the line of scrimmage. But the offensive line has been a big, big disappointment and problem. So, yes, I think you can make the case. I think you could also still make the case that any of the four teams could win the division with, you know, two or three things breaking their way. And, I think the Titans are still eligible for that, but they've got to really start showing something on that side of the ball.
One thing that I looked at with the Bills game on Sunday was I think that what you just said is right. I think this division could be won at 8-8. In fact, that's what I predicted before the season, but that means – there's not a lot of margin for error. So if you don't win the division, your chances of getting the wild card are going to be really dependent upon how you've performed outside of division against other teams that you're competing with. And I look at Buffalo because of the division they're in and say, well, they look like they could be a playoff team, especially based on their record and with a great defense, even with Josh Allen still taking his lumps and trying to learn the NFL level. They look pretty good, and that's a team that can't win the division because the Patriots are the Patriots and they've already beaten them once. So that's a team you've got to deal with in terms of the wild card race, where you look at the Browns, who I thought they would be a wild card potential as well, and that's a good win for the Titans. This is a bad loss. I actually look at this and think we could get to the end of the season and point to this game and say this is why the Titans didn't make the playoffs. Am I nuts or does that make sense?
No, it totally makes sense. And if you look at the Bills' schedule, too, I mean, it's there's a lot of opportunity for the Bills. And that's a great defense. Yeah, I don't have a lot of faith in Josh Allen, but you know what? John Brown's an underrated player. He hurt the Titans. I mean, he had Malcolm Butler twisted up like a pretzel a little bit too often Sunday. And, I think that's a great point. That's a team they could be competing with. You know, I think the AFC North is also probably a one-bit division like the South. But I still think, like you said, any win against an AFC team that could make the playoffs is important. Of course, Titans are also 0-2 in the division.
Yes.
You know, and that is not where you want to be. So you got to, because I think you're right. I mean, 8-8, man, that would be something. I feel like there's a, you know, I could definitely see like 9-7, you know, being enough. And who knows? Hey, the Colts just went, like you said, they go into Kansas City. And I was so impressed with them, and they can they can run. I mean, what, 275 rushing yards
yes.
in that game?
Mack was incredible in that game.
Yeah, I mean, they might go 11-5, you know? I mean, so maybe it won't matter. A team could separate themselves, but they also just came off the loss of the Raiders. So in all likelihood, everyone's going to be kind of clung together the whole way. But that's also, you know, counting on the Titans being consistently inconsistent and, you know, responding this week at Denver is that everyone kind of expects them to do, you know, at some point, if they don't do that, then the discussion starts changing around here.
Because you mentioned the offense, I have to ask you this, like, what are you seeing when you're watching this offense? Like, I look at AJ Brown and I say, I like a lot of what I'm seeing from him. Derrick Henry, when Derrick Henry is getting the football, he still looks right, but I'm seeing Davis still on a milk carton more often than he needs to be. Humphreys, as a returner, has not impressed me as of yet. They're not utilizing them as much. Maybe they're starting to. And even Delaney hasn't done all that much as of late. So when you look at the offense, what's the problem here? Like, I know the offensive line hadn't been good, and Mariota is still doing some of those things that drive us nuts about Marcus Mariota, but what is it? I mean, you can't take – they are blowing it with a great defense where they could win even if they just played average on offense.
Yeah, and like Derrick Henry, like you said, I mean, we wonder going into the year, is that Derrick Henry? Is this going to be the Derrick Henry? Well, I think it is.
Yeah.
I think he's been terrific. You know, I think he's been exactly what they want to be. The number's not always there, you know, based on situation. And frankly, I mean, I'd play him in a lot of the situations they're playing Deion Lewis right now on third down and just have him as a weapon in there still. But that's me. I'd also play Delaney Walker more. You mentioned him. I mean, 40% or 42% of the snaps last game. You know, look, maybe he's lost a step and they know it, and it's just they've got to use him less. But to me, it still feel like, you know, he and Mariota have a connection, and that should happen more. I think we're seeing a little bit of Humphreys being used. But, you know, when you look at the offense as a whole, I still look and say, okay, which of these guys can you say, okay, just go take the top off. Just go make a safety worry about you,
yeah.
You know? And last game, I think the only quote-unquote shot they took, they threw one back shoulder throw down the field that Davis probably should have caught, by the way, and that was about it. And I know some of that is protection, and it's not feeling comfortable, you know, setting up for that long to try to let guys run deeper routes, but I think you have to try to take some shots. I like in the game one with A.J. Brown, you know, they did with him. And of course, some of it's yard after catch, but I think you've got to show that to a defense. There's too many good guys to me for it to be this bad, for it to be 55 points in the last month, 7 points in two of the last three games. That does not add up with the investment and the players they have. So, you know, I still think it starts up front and allowing Mariota to be comfortable. And if you get that, as they did in Atlanta, and I know Atlanta increasingly looks like a dog team,
yeah.
But you saw in that first half, okay, there are some guys who can make plays on this team.
Joe Rexroad, Joe, always enjoy it. Love talking to you. We'll get you on again real soon. Have a good evening.
All right, bud. Thanks for having me, Jason. Really
appreciate it. All right, buddy. That's Joe Rexroad of The Athletic. Find his stuff there. He's one of the best in the business. He's on Twitter at Joe Rexroad. I got to rip WWE because they're going back to Saudi Arabia again, and they're trying to take WrestleMania-level matches there, even though they're taking blood money. It's kind of gross. We'll be right back. Big 6, 104.5 The Zone. Final segment of the program, Big 6 here on 104.5 Zone. Vol calls following us. We'll cage the elephant. Ryan Albanese, my producer. My thanks to Joe Rexroad of The Athletic. Love having him on. He's on Twitter at Joe Rexroad. And yeah, my old buddy and, you know, former employer and now colleague, Clay Travis, always makes this point, and he's told me this off air for years as well. It matters when you tell a guest, hey, I really enjoyed you on the Big 6 tonight. So if you tweet them and you say that, it matters. Like when I go on a show, and I don't have that many opportunities, but there's some stations in Knoxville, one in Hawaii that I've gone on, or a few in Florida, and at times I've, you know, gone on some other stuff. And whenever people are just like, hey, man, never heard of you before, or haven't read your stuff, or have read your stuff and really enjoyed you tonight, that stuff actually counts. So when you hear a guest, and not just on my show, but if you love what Greg Cosell does, let him know. If you love Jason Swain, he'll be on, of course, tomorrow on 3HL in his regular slot. Let him know, because it matters. And then it's a whole lot easier for the station that you love to just be loaded up with the guests that you love. So that's just something to think about. We also had a tweet sent to me from a season ticket holder for Tennessee since the 80s. And he says, at what point does this madness stop? It's been such a loss of money for me over this past decade plus. And so he sent me a summary of his charges just for the hotel in Knoxville on Saturday to watch them get throttled by Georgia. And it was $539 a night for over $1,200. $1,263 he spent on the hotel, plus, of course, his season tickets. Clearly, he cares a lot, and he's blessed because he has the opportunity to do this. I would have stopped a long time ago. At some point, I would have been saving that money and doing something else with it. and just watching those games at home. But if that's an experience that you love, that's an experience that you love. But that's a question that I want to know the answer to from Vols fans is, when does it actually change whether or not you go to these games or not? He tweets me. Justin, I believe, is his name. No, Austin is his name. He says, game loss, season ticks loss, and then the Hotel Hyena loss. Brutal. It sucks. At what point do I stop the insanity? We've had season tickets since the early 80s. The past 15 years have been such a money waste. Past weekend, and then he sends me that photo. It's not good. I don't know what the answer to that question is. Eventually, it gets to the point where you hate something more than you love the other thing. That's when people ask me about my health and they're like, well, you know, when did you decide it was time to lose all that weight? It's like, well, when I looked at a photo of me from the Super Bowl and just looked at my general health and hated the idea of looking the way that I did more than I loved the taste of the food that I was going to have to give up to make the changes I had to make. I had to not care as much about the taste of the Doritos or the taste of that ice cream dessert or whatever that might be on a daily basis, or that large pizza that I would crush by myself. I had to not care as much about that taste as I did about how I looked and how I felt. And that's when it changed. So for the answer to that question, this person saying, when does it stop for me? It stops when you hate watching a loss more than you enjoy the experience of going. That's when apathy sets in. And that's where you see that in the NFL a lot more often. The fan bases in college are just so much more diehard, and they're generational. And so it's harder to kind of pull one away from that cult mentality that brought you to the dance so long ago. So that's a question we're going to be watching and addressing in Knoxville until they start winning. And eventually you have to assume that will happen. We got a stat, an NFL stat for you here on the way out the door before we get to Vols calls. Let's do that real quick. So we'll talk XFL and WWE on Friday. Anyway, Patriots defense through four games, just 34 points they've given up. That's among the best all time through that same stretch. However, the four opponents, the Dolphins, the Bills, the Redskins, and the Jets, and tomorrow night it's the Giants without Saquon Barkley, Sterling Shepard, and with a rookie quarterback. So as good as these Pats have looked, let's calm down putting them with the all-time greatest defenses just yet. Vol Calls is next. Clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose. God bless, and good night from Nashville.